Okay, we'll start as House Judiciary, it's about 1:33, February 24th. President Representative Gruenberg, Navarre, Cotton, Sun, Chair. There are three items before us today. Start with House Bill 137, which has been held over from yesterday on the request of a legal opinion on a couple of constitutional points. We do have that with us from Dick Bradley. It's in your file folder, and he addresses two questions. First, does the limitation of contributions that may be accepted by a candidate from corporations, labor unions, and groups constitute a limitation on free speech or equal protection? And the second question was, do the limits in the bill established on the length of election campaign constitute a limitation of free speech? He has answered both those in the negative. He doesn't feel that the limitation, basically the argument that was made yesterday, that Congress is basically, and the courts have said that we can deny or prohibit contributions from corporations, labor unions. So therefore, if we could prohibit it, we could certainly control it. And on the free speech argument, there's no regulation on free speech, and that's the limitation of this, of the length of the campaign session. He doesn't see it as impingement on a right to free speech on campaigning. Ulmer with us here, and Representative Brown is also.
I move to the pass the bill in committee.
Motion to pass committee substitute for sponsor, substitute for House Bill 137 Judiciary. Any objection? Hearing none, the bill moves. Next item before us, this happens to be Representative Brown, Lee from the Judiciary here. Let's do HCR 11. House Concurrent Resolution Number 11 is an amendment, or a proposed amendment to Rule 22 of the legislature's uniform rule. And also keep in mind that we'll probably discuss both these at the same time, but we also have HBR 44, which is the open meeting, an amendment to the Constitution regarding open meetings. Both of them are prime sponsored by Representative Brown. You can do it either way you want. Which bill you want to start with today, or which order? Your choice.
I'd really like to discuss them together, if I might, because the SCR 11 just incorporates, would make a companion rule change, the same substance that's proposed in the constitutional amendment. if you're ready, I'll just go ahead and talk about both of them. HJR 44 proposes a constitutional amendment that would provide that the legislature is covered by the Open Meetings Act. The need for this arises from the Supreme Court decision last fall in the case brought against the legislature by the League of Women Voters and other organizations, news organizations, challenging activities that took place in the 1986 legislative session. And although there was not a dispute in the record about whether violations of the Open Meeting Act had occurred, the court found that it could not enforce the Open Meetings Act against the legislature because I believe the term is non-judiciable, that the court could not reach into the internal workings of another branch of government, the legislature, which is provided the freedom and ability to make its own rules governing how it will conduct business under the Constitution. So the court found that it had no authority, even though it felt that, or the record indicated that there might have been violations of the open meeting statute, that the court could not enforce that. There was an argument brought up about, well, there was an implied right of access by the public to the legislature, and the court found that there is no implied right in our Constitution. And so for that reason, I feel that we need to amend the Constitution and assure that the public does have the right of access to the deliberations of their elected officials. I'd like to briefly explain the proposed amendment, Mr. Chairman. It has three sentences that would go into the Constitution, and this would be under Article 1, the Bill of Rights. And it would provide that the deliberations of each house of the legislature and of committees and subcommittees and each committee of the whole shall be open to the public unless the body is meeting in executive session to consider matters authorized by law. not to be authorized under the open meeting statute. It further provides that if a matter is appropriate to a particular legislative body, private and substantive deliberation on the matter by a quorum of the body is a violation. And further, that caucuses of the legislature may meet in private to consider matters of procedure, organization, or strategy. Section 2 of the bill makes some legislative findings and sets out essentially the material, some of the material in summary form that's now contained in the Open Meetings Act. Finally, Section 3 of the bill provides that the proposed amendment would be placed before the voters at the next general election. So essentially what this is doing is making the Open Meetings Act enforceable, or allowing the court to enforce the Open Meetings Act should there be violations in the future by the legislature. And I think it's important to do this because I think openness in government is fundamental to having it operate in the interest of the citizens, and that the rules that we make should be enforceable and not subject to the whims of the majority. We're talking about something, in my view, and my views come from my background as a journalist, that it is very important that the public and the press have a right of access to the deliberations of elected officials. Why a quorum? Why draw the line there? I think it's clear that the Open Meetings Act was not intended to apply to two people talking, two legislators talking on an ad hoc basis, and yet Attorney Lee Sharp told a group of municipal officials recently that that's how he interprets it. So it is, I think, appropriate to draw the line at some reasonable place so that business can carry on and function, and so that the representatives can lobby their colleagues on issues of importance to them on a one-on-one basis. And the quorum is, I think, you know, a reasonable place to draw the line. So under this amendment, as it's proposed, any group of legislators, assuming they don't constitute a quorum of a committee with jurisdiction over an issue, could get together and talk about the substance of an issue and debate and try to reach agreement. But what we're saying here is that a quorum of a committee that would be appropriate to consider that issue should not be meeting privately to resolve it or debate it. So that would end the fears, I guess, that some people might have that two people talking would be considered a meeting. And further, the amendment provides for caucuses to take place and for caucuses to consider matters of procedure, organization, or strategy. I read these two sentences in conjunction with each other so that the if you had a quorum of a body, say, for example, a quorum of the Finance Committee that was contained within a larger group of people, would not be appropriate for those people to debate a budget item, as an example of how that would work. Would not be appropriate to debate the substance of it. We had some discussion in the prior committee that heard this bill on what strategy is and how to define that, and why is that part of this proposal. The dictionary definition of a strategy is that it's a careful plan or method, or the art of devising or using plans or stratagems toward a goal. Strategy may be like pornography in the sense that when you see it, you know it, and it is hard to define what it is, but I think it is not substantive deliberation on the merits of a measure or a bill or a budget item. And where we can't define it precisely, we have to look to our own sense of propriety in policing our activities and being sure that we are erring on the side of public access and openness. I wanted to briefly advise you of the process that went on in coming up with this proposal. Shortly after the court ruled last year, a group of journalists and people who had been involved in the lawsuit, including people from the League of Women Voters, began meeting in Anchorage and invited me to attend their meetings, and I attended several of their meetings, as did Senator Sergelewski. We went through about a dozen drafts to try to get agreement on a proposal that group was considering putting forward as an initiative, about, you know, an initiative to try to force the legislature to act on it. And in the process of that, we considered a lot of different alternatives and eventually came up with the language that's proposed in HJR 44 as something that the people in that group felt they could support as a reasonable, workable, realistic way to draw the line there and bring some definity to what is now a confused and situation that leaves us in limbo, because we really don't have any sideboards on what the legislature can do. One senator described the Supreme Court's action as giving the legislature a blank check to do an act as ever 21 people felt was appropriate, and I think that is correct, because the law cannot be enforced. So, finally, Mr. Chairman, there is a fiscal note, and the fiscal note is very small. It's $2,200, unless the cost of putting this on the ballot forces them to have another ballot card, in which case the cost will be $53,400. But it's unknown at this time which of those two would be the case. So in summary, I think HJR 44 provides realistic, workable standards that would allow the legislature to conduct its business both efficiently and in the open, and that it would discourage abuse, and it would ensure that the public's right of access is protected through the deliberations of the legislature. The other measure that's scheduled for consideration today, CS for sponsor substitutes for HCR 11. We proposed a Judiciary Committee substitute that incorporates the same concepts that are proposed in HJR 44. There should be a title change, I believe, that would more precisely specify what this version of the proposal addresses, proposing an amendment to Rule 22 of the Alaska State Legislature relating to open meetings. The prior versions of this resolution dealt with caucus meetings, and that was some efforts we had worked on prior to the Supreme Court decision. So I will stop there, and thank you very much for carrying the resolution.
Representative Cotton, you have a question, and then Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a co-sponsor, and I support the concept. Although, another question came to my mind. You're on the Finance Committee, and you sit on some Finance Subcommittees, right?
Yes.
How many subcommittees do you sit on?
Four.
Do any of them have three members?
They all have three members.
So, yeah. Therefore, you could make a phone call to somebody and talk about something that was in front of the subcommittee and be in violation of the Constitution then?
Yes, under the way that this is proposed. But if I might comment on that, I've tried very hard to run the subcommittees in the open, and the subcommittee members and I do not discuss substantive matters pending before the committee except in open session. So we just don't talk about it until we're in an open committee meeting, and then we discuss things that are pending.
Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, I have one question about, I assume we're looking really at the Judiciary CS in the House Concurrent Resolution Chapter 1.
We're dealing with both of these, yeah.
No, but I mean, this was, with respect to the CS. We
yeah,
shouldn't
right.
look at the one, the earlier one. We should look at the proposed CS, is that right?
That's
yeah.
true.
The second sentence doesn't make any sense to me. The first underlined one, a quorum of a legislative body may not engage in private and substantive deliberation on a matter within the jurisdiction of the body. Maybe I just didn't read it right. You're saying that a quorum of a legislative body may only engage in public discussion. That's
yes, Representative, that's correct.
I see. Okay. And secondly, just a technical question on House Joint Resolution 44. On line 15, it says, consider matters authorized by law. This is on the joint resolution.
Yes, sir.
When you say by law, within the phrase by law, you would mean by rule. That's within the phrase by law. Uniform rule or something like that would be within your intent, right?
I suppose the rules
are
considered part of the law. I'm not certain about that. Perhaps the chairman knows. What I had assumed that by law meant as authorized by the statute, by the Open Meetings Act itself in the statute, you know, where it lists the items that are appropriate to be considered in executive session and specifies the procedure for going into executive session.
Okay, well, yeah, I would like you to consider that. You don't have to make a decision on it now, but I would suggest just technically that the phrase by law either be very clearly intended to mean including the uniform rules or any formal rules, or that it says by law or the uniform rules, because we are also governed by the uniform rules. And I would think that that would be, you know, considering the way you amend their uniform rules, they may be more difficult to amend than by statute. And you proposed a uniform rule, in fact. And if this passes and the concurrent resolution passes, then this wouldn't have any effect, because it would be unconstitutional, at least technically, if the only way you could implement this is by statute. I think you have to have within your intent here the uniform rules as well as by law.
I think it's pretty clear the uniform rules are not law.
Well, then I think that you ought to consider what I've said, and you might want to include that. Also, my staff has suggested that and I don't know if this is necessary, but we ought to ask legal counsel, adding another sentence on line 19, that the legislature shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation, and I would say the legislature by court rule, by a uniform rule, the provisions of this article.
Did you repeat that?
It's a type of language that's found in a number of different sections. For example, the section on the 120-day session limitation. There it says shall enforce. But basically what Mark Hanley, my LA, said is the legislature shall have the, adding sentences, the legislature shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article.
I'm not sure what that's adding or what.
Well, I'm not certain it's necessary, but a lot of times, like if you look at the 120-day session limitation amendment, that indicates that the legislature shall pass, in that case, uniform rule to implement the constitutional provision, which we haven't done as yet, but that's a requirement. And Mark suggests, and I tend to think that if it's effective, if it does make a difference, it's a good idea to put it in there. It's kind of boilerplate language. You can find it in various constitutional amendments.
I can get something clearer, the uniform rules, if I follow what the court was saying, are something the legislature uses to police itself or govern itself, but the court isn't going to interfere in the enforcement or applicability of the rules. That's up to the legislature, right? So our concurrent resolution 11 here is a proposal to change our own rules, which we can or we can't do, and then if we choose not to abide by them, the court isn't going to enforce the legislative rules. Is that a fair summary of where we're at?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So I think the effect of, Mr. Chairman, the effect that Representative Grunberg proposed would be to give the court the authority to enforce the rules.
At least in that respect, in the respect of this amendment. I think...
Why would we want to give the court the ability to enforce rules in the legislature, separate body, branch of government? Why is the court going to do a better job than we do ourselves?
Are you asking me?
Tossing it on the table.
I think that obviously the intent of this amendment is to give the courts the power to enforce it and any rules or legislation under it. And whether you call it one or the other, the court, it's clearly your intent, the sponsor's intent, to let the court act as the enforcing mechanism here. Otherwise, there is no method of enforcement. We're left to our own devices. That's the whole teak, the whole policy behind this thing. And so, regardless of whether you call it a statute or you call it a court, a uniform rule, the intent is that the court can enforce it. My feeling is that these things are better put into the uniform rules than they are to be put into statute, because we are governed by uniform rules. It's like the court rules. It provides for a conflicting source of authority. If some of your court rules are in statute and some of them are in the rules, they all ought to be together. And it's a different question of who enforces it. My thought would be to, if you're going to do it, to put it in the rules and give the court the power to enforce it.
If you put it in law, then you've given the executive branch also the authority to have something to say about it, because the governor either has to sign it or not sign it.
Yeah, that's probably another reason. Why do you have the executive branch getting into something that is strictly legislative open meeting?
Toss the issue on the table. Any other comments? We have one other person who wanted to testify, so I want to have some time for that. Taylor and then Cotton.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little confused. Is substantive deliberation somehow defined in here? I didn't see it anymore. I wonder if you do have a definition for it. What is a substantive deliberation?
It's not defined in the resolution. The definition that I've come up with is formal or informal discussion that leads to agreement, consensus, commitment, promise, decision, or vote on a matter pending before the legislature.
Well, I think I would probably agree with that representative. That's a good idea, but yeah, you know, you and I can come up with a definition. It isn't in this law. It isn't in effect.
Well, that's true, sir, but I think the words themselves mean something, and it's not necessary to define every single word in every law in order for the law to have meaning and to be valid.
Okay. What about procedure, organization, or strategy? Do you have definitions for those, and will you offer them as amendments?
Well, I discussed a moment ago definitions of strategy or what strategy is. The strategy for that a legislative body or a caucus would employ in, or that a caucus would employ in advancing the goals of the caucus, how they would propose to achieve those things in the legislative process, I think would be strategy. But procedure, I think the definition of procedural items as differentiated from substantive debate is pretty clear. Organization would refer to how the caucus is organized and the election of officers, and I'd note that that is already exempted in the open meeting statute.
I guess that's my real question is, why are we reinventing the wheel so that it's a different thing for the legislature than what we're requiring our city councils to do, since that seems to work pretty well out there?
Yes, sir. I understand what you're saying. Well, you know, the Open Meetings Act right now applies to everyone, every public body at the local level. It applies to the executive branch. It applies to the legislature by the words. Now, this court decision said it does, you know, effectively that it has no meaning with respect to the legislature. It's not enforceable against the legislature. So in essence, unless we take action to make it enforceable against the legislature, we put the legislature in a different category than we have everyone else, because we're saying to the local bodies, you know, you must follow this law, but we're saying to ourselves, we won't if we don't feel like it today, or if we can get 21 votes to do something else, we won't. So that's why I feel that the constitutional amendment puts the legislature on the same footing with the other bodies and with the executive branch in making the act have meaning.
But it doesn't. It's a different set of rules for the legislature than it is for most people out there. I guess all I'm saying is, wouldn't a one-line bill that says the legislature shall be bound by the Open Meetings Act put us all on the same playing field? Or do we have to have special exceptions for procedure, organization, or procedure, strategy, and substantive deliberation? We're not going to let the state council do it. Why can we do it?
Thank you. You could stop with the first sentence. If you did that, I think the effect would be that you would the only thing in effect then would be the Substance in Open Meetings Act, the statute. The issue addressed in the second sentence is, at what point do you have a meeting? And there's been a lot of debate and discussion about that, and I alluded to that in my opening remarks, that this is becoming a real issue among municipal officials. I attended a conference of the Municipal League last fall and participated in a panel on this subject, and there were a number of comments from officials in the audience, local officials, trying to understand and interpret, you know, what did this mean to them and how could they function under it. And as I said, there was an attorney who stood up and said, well, I'm advising my clients that it means any two people having a conversation about anything, and you shouldn't even talk on the phone to anybody about anything related to city business or to the business of your community your council or your assembly. And that was, and then there was one married couple there, and they got up and said, well, if you think we're not going to talk about city business, you're crazy. And, you know, so it's being carried, I think, in some situations to the extreme where people aren't even able to function at all, and I don't think that that is what is intended. So I guess I wouldn't have any objection to amending the underlying act. When we were struggling with how to put this proposal together, we did consider an amendment that would be broad in scope and would cover everyone, you know, local, state, and executive branch and everyone else. And after going back and forth a while, we concluded that that to try to get something passed, it would be easier to address the whole, you know, where is there a problem that we're trying to plug up, instead of, you know, taking on the broad issues of everything, of how the Open Meeting Act affects every, you know, local official. So what we were trying to do was say, let's take, you know, the fabric that's here and address these specific issues that have come up in relation to the legislature. And it's because of the court decision that the legislature is now different than these other bodies, because, of course, there have been a number of cases where the court has found violations by various bodies and violations by the executive branch of the open meetings law. So, you know, I think the specific provision about why address caucuses was that Senator Sertoluski felt that we would never get to first base if we did not acknowledge the reality of caucuses and their place in the legislative process. And, you know, so she felt that it would be good to address it all in one single package. I'm not particularly wedded to, you know, this precise thing, because you have to look at it, it's all a layered concept, you know, the Constitution, the statute, the rules, and how they all fit together, and it's, you know, gets increasingly difficult to amend them as you go up the chain. So I hope that is helpful in understanding how we came to propose this.
I understand what you're saying. I still don't understand, I guess, why a caucus of the Anchorage Assembly is somehow not as sacrosanct as you're attempting here to make the caucuses of the majority of this House, or the minority, or somebody else around here. Why are we some sort of special privileged group that is supposed to have special rules for ourselves that don't apply to people that are trying to pass laws in Anchorage or pass laws in Ketchikan?
Well, we did consider that.
Just saying, I want to make sure that we have other people here to testify, that we can get the testimony in before we get into a lot of give and take on this. So maybe
I could just answer that one question.
Yeah,
while
okay.
It's there, you know, we are the only bicameral body. There are no local governments that have bicameral situation, a House and a Senate, two separate bodies, separate organizations.
We're the only legislature in the state, too. Eve, do you want to offer your comments?
As he is coming up, if I just might, having served on an assembly at a local government level, there's a big difference because of the small numbers on city council and assembly. It's, you know, you talk to two or three other people, and boy, you've got something passed. In this body, I mean, you have to talk to how many folks to reach a consensus on the way the bill should be drafted and how to get it through and when it should pass, and then you've got to deal with the other body. So I think on one level, the answer to Robin's question is it's just a question of numbers and a complex body versus a simple body.
Eve, do you want to give your name and who you represent? Please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Eve Reckley. I represent the League of Women Voters of Alaska. The League supports enactment of House Joint Resolution Number 44 to amend the Constitution of the State of Alaska to require that deliberations of legislative committees and subcommittees be open to the public. We appreciate the opportunity to present the testimony on this legislation, which is one of the highest priorities for action in this legislation, this legislative session. The League believes strongly in the right of public access to deliberation of legislative bodies, so much so that it pressed its challenge of violations of the Open Meetings Act by legislative committee members to the Supreme Court of the State of Alaska. While the issue was undisputed that closed meetings were held at various times during the formulation of the 1987 Alaska state budget, the High Court held there is no implied right of public access to legislative committee or caucus meetings under the Alaska Constitution. The League asks you now to approve the resolution to constitutionally guarantee the right of public access to deliberation of legislative bodies. The League submitted affidavits to the Supreme Court, to the Superior Court, attesting to a pattern of meetings by legislative committee and caucus majority members which were closed to the public, the press, and sometimes to minority members of the legislature. The legislators did not deny the meetings occurred or that they conducted the business and made the decisions that the League alleged. However, the Supreme Court's decision reversing the decision of the lower court was based on the separation of powers doctrine, that the court had no constitutional authority to enforce the law governing the operating procedures of the legislature. It is questionable whether such a win is really a win for the legislature or the public. We believe that when the legislature refuses to follow the laws it establishes, public confidence is undermined. You have an opportunity now to help restore the public confidence. The resolution before you, HJR 44, is simple and straightforward. It would amend the Constitution to provide the legal framework for the courts to enforce the Open Meetings Act. An amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska to expressly mandate the right of public access is the only way to secure this guarantee. Without it, the Open Meetings Act, insofar as it relates to the legislature, is meaningless. This proposal, developed with the League's participation and support, is not intended to prevent the free flow of ideas among legislators or their participation in public forums, in community events, or social events. Time and again, the question has been raised, what is substantive deliberations? We think you know. And if there is ever a question, trust the public to make that determination. Hold the discussions in open meetings. The League believes that the better informed the public is, the better our government will be, because it will be reflective of the will of the people. The League believes that constitutionally mandating open meetings is vital to making the legislative process accessible and accountable, as well as more responsive to and representative of the people of Alaska. As you know, the resolution requires a two-thirds vote of both the House and the Senate and the signature of the governor to place it before voters in November. This process will give voters a say in whether they believe public access to legislative meetings should be guaranteed in the Constitution of the State of Alaska. The League of Women Voters of Alaska asks you to give the people of Alaska the opportunity to make that decision. We urge your approval of HJR 44. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to toss one issue out here that hasn't been discussed. I guess let's assume this is adopted and it's in place, and some of these other issues are. What's the remedy? Do we have the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine here that, you know, once the issue is discussed in a meeting that the court finds is violation, that all subsequent actions related to that are now bad? And what's the remedy? Can anything be made right or rectified if there is a meeting, and assume a meeting that's closed? I assume somebody will bring a lawsuit to bring the court involved to declare that it was closed, or I don't know what happens then. I guess, do you just go back and do it again in the open, or do you is whatever result of that is gone forever? I don't know. Has anybody thought about that?
Are you addressing
this? Yeah, I guess addressing.
Well, the original lawsuit requested a temporary restraining order, which would have voided the action taken in a meeting that was closed that violated the action. I am not a legal authority, so I don't know if that would hold, but
I don't even know what decision was made in a closed meeting in that lawsuit. So, but did the league talk about what action could be taken to remedy things?
That may be a question addressed to the sponsor.
Fruit of the poisonous tree is turned into the China laundry case stitches here. And Mac will have to explain that one. Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Open Meeting Act provides in subsection F that action taken contrary to this section is void. So that's the remedy provided for violations of that. I don't know what the remedy would be if there was a violation of the sentence here affecting caucuses that's not addressed.
Well, how about the violation of substantive deliberation of a quorum of the of a committee meeting somewhere, right? They didn't take any official action. They show up later. I'm just trying to figure out what everybody's trying to tackle here.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, all votes got to be recorded. That's why we have a lot of staff around here and tape machines and all that stuff. But
well. I guess the problem as I see it is right now the statute says, all meetings of, and then it goes on to list this long list of things, are open to the public except as otherwise provided. Mm-hmm. And then, it's defining it in terms of a body, board, commission, and all these different things. Well, when do you have, one of those groups formally meeting? It's kind of going to the idea of, or the difference between a formal group meeting like this or an informal meeting of people. And the whole problem with the caucuses, and that's why I think, that the resolution or the language proposing the resolution tries to address some of those things and say when exactly it is that you have a meeting. You need to draw the line somewhere.
Any other question, Representative Taylor?
Yes. You participated, the league did, in the drafting and work on this bill?
Yes. I was not personally involved, but league members and
in essence, you guys have signed off on it and said we'll go along with this.
Yeah. We strongly support it.
Would you strongly also support the concept that this legislature abide by the same laws that every other body has to abide by in this state? That was your lawsuit.
Well, the other bodies are subject to the Open Meetings Act.
So are we. It's just the Supreme Court doesn't have jurisdiction over us. That's the only reason we can abide.
It makes the act itself pretty meaningless if it's not enforceable.
But we can pass a constitutional amendment here, one line that says that act applies to the legislature. We can grant that jurisdiction to the courts and let them enforce it. Let them listen to suits such as yours. Isn't that what you want?
We want meetings open to the public and enforcement of that.
Well, if you think you're going to get meetings open to the public, one more than you've had in the past, but the loopholes that are built into this thing. This isn't a plug, this is a sieve. Right now we've got, quote, strategy meetings going on. We've got procedural meetings going on. Why can't the Anchorage Assembly sit down and have a little strategy that they're all going to vote one way and then come walking back out into the room and cast their votes that way?
Okay, Ms. Taylor, I just want to direct questions to the witness here. We don't have any further questions for your Representative Cotton. Did you have
No, I just wanted to remind Mr. Taylor that how's that biblical quote go? If you're pure, you can cast the first stone. I don't think you're any more pure than anybody else at this table. I know you attend closed caucuses. I've been in the same room with you when you did.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Let's not pretend that some of us are pure and some of us aren't.
I'm not suggesting that.
Any other questions?
I had a question for the witness that basically was that she, in fact, wanted stronger legislation. I wanted to know that. That's all I asked.
Representative Navarre, did you have a question? Thank you very much. Once in a while, the committee here kind of likes to do a little different thing than Representative Grunberg.
I would just like to thank you very much for coming, and we really appreciate the work of the league in this and other areas, and I think all of us appreciate that.
Yeah, some people feel intimidated to come to this committee. I'm glad the league isn't one of them.
Some people feel intimidated to do on it.
Representative Cotton.
Yeah, and these exchanges are healthy, and I appreciate the good humor Mr. Taylor offers. since the time you phoned me and wanted to make sure I was still on board. And in fact, you know, if somebody would have appointed us as a subcommittee and we had done that, we wouldn't have been able to discuss this constitutional amendment. And that's where I've got a problem with these subcommittees, and suggest that we should stop at committees only. And the way to get around it is just not appoint a subcommittee and say, one of the few of you get together and look at this. As you know, the chairman of the committee has the authority to appoint subcommittees right now, so he could appoint a subcommittee of three of us to examine something here. Or he could not say anything and we could agree to get together and examine something, and then we wouldn't be a subcommittee and we would not be in violation. In fact, though, the deliberations and the votes that are taken in a committee are recorded and records are kept, and I think that's a standard that can be met. I don't believe that by suggesting in the Constitution that subcommittees should fall into the same classification is logical. And this is, you know, my experience in the legislature has been that subcommittees rarely play an important role. I know on the Finance Committee now that the subcommittees are probably more substantive than any other subcommittees that exist. But even so, those subcommittees come back and report to the committee, and then the committee takes whatever action they're going to take, and then that committee recommends to the legislature in the form of the budget bill what action the body ought to take. So it seems like you've gone back three steps, and I think you only have to go back two steps.
Well, I would note, just for the record, that subcommittees on this committee don't have all that much power. This committee chews up everything that's brought back to the table, regardless of who brings it. So in this area of the world here, it's a full committee process. Representative Brown, did you want to comment on that?
My closing comment, other than that, okay. Great.
I think that's a good point, and I could live with taking that out, because it is, you know, the subcommittee, what I was thinking of, and what we were thinking of, was the budget subcommittees, but you're right, there are ways to subvert it, and it is a piece. The subcommittee as a discretionary act of the chair, I think it's still...
Finance committee's been run in many different ways over the years. Some have been a committee of the whole, some have been jurisdictional committees, and now the subcommittees are made up of people who aren't even on finance committee.
Mr. Chairman, although I wouldn't want to imply that not putting it in the Constitution would lessen the obligation of a subcommittee, should there be one, to meet in public. I mean, I think right now, I've always thought that subcommittees were covered under subsection A, because it says including subordinate units of the above groups. So it's an official subordinate unit. It's got a delegated task to conduct business, and it ought to conduct a business publicly, but I think that it is covered in the statute right now.
Representative Grunberg and Taylor.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the effort that's gone into this to provide some sort of a path to respond to public concern about whether or not we're holding our meetings in a proper fashion or not. That Representative Cotton reminded me, I certainly did participate in those in the past. For the last 2 years, I have not, nor has my caucus, participated in any meetings that were not in full compliance with the existing Public Meetings Act. And I don't find that a very difficult process. It makes for a bit of a chill sometimes on the discussions that may take place when the press is sitting in the room, and we always have a member of the majority staff sitting there with us, at least one, sometimes two or three, taking notes on what our comments are, which are promptly reported back, I assume, so
we're trying to
knows.
Give any good ideas.
Sure. And we're trying to give good ideas. Trying is a big word, right? The frustration I find, though, is that the problem is a problem that's just as difficult for us to face as it is for every city council out there. And to sit back and say, well, our problems are more unique than the city council or the school board's problems, I think begs the question. If we're really going to address this thing, let's address it so it affects all people across the state, and let's all get on the same level playing field with them. The fact that there may be 60 members to this body,
does not mean you need to have 60 people that have to approve of something. All it means is you have to have the right committee chairman, the right power group, and you're going to get it done. And you can take care of that very quickly if you happen to be in favor at the time or be part of that group. And to hide behind the word strategy, procedure, or substantive deliberation, when we will not allow the school boards and the city councils to utilize those same devices to lock the door, keep the public and the press out, so we can have a discussion about something, I think is hypocritical. I'm concerned that we're setting a double standard in this state. It's okay if you're talking about, quote, big important things in the legislature to lock the door. It's not important enough to lock the door on in Anchorage or Ketchikan. I believe that there's a body here that wants to provide for that level playing field to be able to go home and feel comfortable talking to our school board members. But this thing that we have before us is a compromise of principles that I just can't believe we're going to go along with here.
Representative Ulmer, did you have a comment?
I made it earlier.
Representative Barr.
Yeah, I guess I was just going to follow up on a comment that Representative Ulmer made earlier with regard to that. There's some significant differences. First of all, as far as I know, the assemblies around the state and the school boards and municipal government assemblies don't have a majority-minority split. They're nonpartisan. Also, they are not bicameral systems. So I think just those in itself are significant differences. And as far as strategy goes, that's certainly important in the legislature, both because of the, work between the two sides, the upper body in the House and lower body in the Senate, and the minority and the majority.
Any other comments?
I guess I just have one question, and it follows up on your earlier comment about the remedy.
Mm-hmm.
In working on this over the interim, did you by any chance look at any other states that may have a similar constitutional provision or similar laws that do in fact create the judicial standing, so to speak, of being able to determine whether the legislature is following its own laws? And if so, what kind of experience those other states have had?
I was looking at Makai Campbell, who did a lot of work on this, and I think he might have some comments, but I would say we did look at a lot of other states, and it was not particularly helpful. The provisions that other states have, although a number of other states do have provisions, it seems like it's 35 states have an open meeting provision in their constitution, but they are generally quite broad, and they say, you know, everything is open unless the legislature determines it shouldn't be open, or, you know, something to that effect. I mean, they didn't really seem to draw any concrete lines with respect to when things had to be open or not. But could I ask Mr. Makai if he could comment?
Well, I just want to bring up, what I see the problem of happening here that I want to try to think about a little bit is that the violation of, quote, a substantive deliberation, what's the statute of limitations, the legislature adjourns, say it's a tax law of some sort or any other type of law, it's attacked in court to void the implication of the law because, quote, there was a violation of the open meeting law because there was a substantive deliberation by a quorum of a committee at some point during the session. I can see, this is a open relief act for lawyers here. Every law that is that comes out is going to be challenged on some factual basis that there was a violation in its implementation or its deliberation. And I guess I'm really concerned about, at what point in time can a lawsuit be brought to void an act of the legislature based upon the fact that it was a violation of the open meeting law. I think it's an open invitation to attack every law and every move the legislature makes. And at some point, there has to be some certainty in this. So, Kai, if you have any comments, maybe just identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm Kai Campbell, staff of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee, and was involved in some of the work during the interim on this measure. Excuse me, as Representative Brown indicated, there are 35 states that have constitutional amendments dealing with open meetings. those sort of run a gamut. The ones that have been in constitutions for quite some time are, as Representative Brown indicated, generally very broad, including Louisiana's, which along the same thing should be open, also allows the legislature to jail anyone who they think is perhaps asking too nosy a question. But in
what state was that?
Louisiana.
Do you want an amendment?
In, however, states that have adopted constitutional amendments more recently, these tend to be much more stringent. The state of California does operate under an extremely stringent open meeting law. The provision that we have drafted is perhaps closest to the state of Oregon. If a constitutional amendment did pass, I think it would certainly require some statutory changes or implementing statutes to be adopted. The fruit of the poison tree is normally the measure that is used as a corrective measure. However, normally there are time limits and constraints, and I believe what other states have found is simply, even if there is no remedy, the fact that people can sue and have a court hold that a certain legislators were in violation of the statute has proven to be a very effective political remedy also. That's all I have.
I wouldn't think that some, you know, I won't surmise on some of the, I can just imagine circumstances just to try to throw, appeal points into the process as it goes through the legislature. You don't really quite like what's happening. You could kind of sow the seeds of eventual victory in a subsequent lawsuit after the legislature's all out, right? I mean, you can lay it out there and then provide the basis for the lawsuit, take it all out. Representative Brown.
Well, on that point, that is in fact the case today. I don't see how that is made worse with the adoption of this amendment. We see lawsuits frequently challenging things the legislature has done, and by people who don't like it, and throwing in the Open Meetings Act, for example, when the North Slope Borough tried to stop the Bogersee lease sale, they sued on that ground and were successful. Although the court did not actually overturn the sale.
Sued on what grounds?
That the one of the advisory committees in the executive branch had met.
Not the legislature.
Right, but it dealt with a remedy, because they found that there had been a violation of the act because the groups working on the sale had violated the act. So what's the remedy? Well, is the remedy that the sale doesn't occur or is overturned? And the court said no in that case because we did have a very substantial public record, and they cited all the other opportunities that there had been for the public to have access to it. They found that, the thing would stand, the sale itself would stand.
But, I guess what that would lead me to say is that you can overcome the prohibition for a quorum of the body to meet in substantive deliberation by showing that there was substantial opportunity for public comment at some other place in the process. I'm not sure that's what the purpose here is. That's that's the rectifying remedy type thing, right? Is that if you have an overwhelming amount of public process that was open, that would kind of counteract the closed subsequent substantive deliberation in a closed meeting. So there's now you're into a balancing scale, right?
But of course, there are other remedies that could be considered, such as fines or civil sanctions or penalties for people who are found to have personally violated it, and that's another thing that could be considered.
I think I have some immunity here from all of that. At least that's my reading of the Constitution. Representative Grunberg.
It might be. First of all, I agree with what you said that if a court were to give a declaratory judgment that a bill was passed in violation of this or that the legislature were acting, that would have terrific political ramifications and in and of itself would certainly be an enforcing mechanism. Another thing might be if, let us say, we passed a bill in violation of an Open Meetings Act and went over to the Senate could properly refuse to consider that on the basis that we hadn't followed our rules, or vice versa. I think there'd be some internal checks and balances on this thing too that we ought to consider.
I think we can do that today.
You bet.
That's within our own bodies. Representative Costa, no question.
Have you thought about how somebody would be able to bring a charge that substantive deliberation had taken place perhaps a dissident member of the caucus might complain. Otherwise, I mean, if nobody's in there, I mean, it would have to be somebody's testimony that was used to prove that a substantive deliberation that had taken place in the caucus to begin with.
You could allege it and go on a fishing expedition under depositions. Just make the allegation that it took place and then just start taking everybody's depositions, find out who was where, when, and what they talked about. All right, Representative Cotton, I've interrupted.
No, that's fine. I just was asking for some other comments or thoughts on that subject.
Another approach that could be considered, and I'm saying this in a helpful way, is looking at the Legislative Ethics Act. Because in a way, we could say that it is, and very validly, that it is not acting ethically to meet in a closed session. And that would subject the member or members who did that to ethical action.
We have that remedy right now. We can throw somebody out of the legislature if we want to.
But this would specifically make it a violation of the Ethics Act. And that might be another enforcing mechanism. The thing I'm concerned about is, and there's a case called Johnson versus the state, which involved a challenge to a mechanics lien law on the basis that the yeas and nays on final passage were not recorded. And the court basically said, yeah, that is correct. And it, on some technical basis, I don't think it finally reached the final result, but basically they could have stricken that statute on the basis that the yeas and nays were not finally recorded as required under the Constitution. And it resulted in considerable change of the legislative way the legislature and the state conducted business. But that went to, well, it may be no more than this, to the method of enacting legislation. And it didn't necessarily, it went to the internal procedure of enactment. This might be somewhat similar. And you might take a look at that. If you can look it up, it's set aside under Civil Rule 54B in the annotations. There are several Johnsons versus the state. But that might provide you with some guidance here.
Any other comments on this issue, Kai?
Mr. Chairman, just before I mentioned that when we drafted this, we realized that there are myriad questions that no constitutional language can answer, and that we did try to observe the difference between constitutional language and statutory language, which nails down all the details. I think there's no doubt that if this passed, it would require some statutory changes to implement it and make it effective and to work. But that is not the type of language which you normally put in the Constitution, so we did try to observe that distinction. And just the second point is that these points can be resolved because there are a number of other states, and I use California as an example, that operate under far more stringent guidelines than these.
Okay,
thank you.
There's two issues here. One, that we can appoint a subcommittee to work on this and go through a few things, or we can expand the discussion to occupy the time available for the rest of the meeting.
Just for purpose of discussion on HJR 44, I move that on lines 12 and 13 we delete the words "and subcommittees" and "of each committee of the whole." So the sentence would now read, "The deliberations of each House of Legislature and the deliberations of the committees shall be open to the public," etc.
Motion on the floor, any comment?
Just a question. You included there, Representative Cotton, "and each committee of the whole"?
Yes.
I understood the subcommittee concern, but why committee of the whole?
The only committee of the whole that I know is
the same thing. That's redundant because each house of the legislature
can meet as a committee of the whole. So mm-hmm. You're covered under that side of it there.
You either have a committee or you have the body, but the committee of the whole is a term of art that describes when the body meets as a committee.
Yeah.
So I think they're included without those words. I haven't thought about it too much, but
not sure.
Is there two different possibilities there?
Yeah,
I think so. I think you should confine it to the words, striking the words "and subcommittee."
Give me the situation where the committee of the whole would be different than the either house of the legislature.
Well, yeah, it technically is a different animal.
Maybe the whole means both bodies meeting together, is that what you're saying?
No.
No, just the House or the Senate meeting as a committee of the whole.
Okay.
To discuss a subject.
Why wouldn't that be covered then as a House of the legislature?
I don't disagree with that. I think it may be within the term committee meeting.
I think before we strike that, we ought to check with legal counsel.
Fine with me.
But certainly, and subcommittees, that is very clear.
Becca, it sounds like you don't want to move this today.
No.
So I would strike my last. I would move that my last amendment be withdrawn, asking for consent. And I won't make another motion right now, and ask that Mr. Hartle investigate that and return to the committee with a report from somebody that, I'm not sure who to ask, but. Sounds like you might wrote this. You might have some idea.
Well, we went around and around on this with the drafters in the kayak. Excuse me, making faces at me over there. Might have a comment on it, but the attorney was quite insistent that each committee of the whole be in there. And,
which attorney is this?
Mr. Bradley.
Well,
same one that you relied on.
Oh, we can find out.
Yeah, it's
purpose.
I'm sure they. I don't recall exactly why it is that it needs to be there, but
that was a constitutional opinion. This is a drafting style. I often have differed with Mr. Bradley on his drafting style.
Question: is that a distinction or a distinction without a difference?
Anybody here want to work on this piece of legislation? Both of these? Any volunteers?
We're still talking about it.
I just want to get the mechanical stuff done here.
Yeah, I understand.
There's a couple of sponsors here. I'm seeing Navarre and Cotton.
I have an amendment I'd like to offer if I can get before.
Well, what I'd like to do is just not really mark up the bill right now. It's just taking get some thought to it. I want to think a little bit about some of the issues that came up here. Cotton, you and Navarre, and Taylor, either you or Ms. Barnes.
I do.
Take your choice.
For John Hartle's benefit, like an amendment that we're going to insert instead delete 15 through 19 and insert pursuant to Alaska Statute 4462.310, if that's appropriate. Maybe improper correction.
Maybe you could get drafting to get that typed up, and you can offer it when we bring it back and have it on the table here.
The basic thrust is just put the Open Meetings Act into the Constitution.
Applicable
to us.
In HCR 11, also, you might want to look at that first sentence, line 15 and 16. Maybe the same thing could be said in a little different manner that reads a little bit better. Representative Bloomberg brought that up. So
I'd like to delete that sentence.
Okay.
Could you repeat what you just said?
Yeah, in HCR 11, I think Max brought up a point that sentence reads difficult.
Yeah.
There might be another way to write it in the positive rather than the negative. I just want the guys that are working on the committee here. Figure that out. I want you to make sure you announce all your meetings, hold them in public, please. Representative Bloomberg.
There was just one technical question to the subcommittee for its public deliberations on this. I think there should be an amendment to Article 2, because Article 2 deals with the legislature. Article 1 deals with something else.
I meant to bring that up.
Yes, I think it should be an amendment to Article 2.
We specifically put it as an amendment to the Bill of Rights because we feel that it is a fundamental right that people have to maintain control over the organizations they've created and to be able to know what we're up to down here. So it was a deliberate decision to put it.
I would suggest you reconsider that, because when people look in the Constitution for things dealing with the legislature, they look in Article 2, not in Article 1.
Okay, but this would be
big,
the rights of the public.
Hour. Any other comments or directions to the subcommittee? Okay. Any other items to come before us today? If not, we're adjourned.
Oh, I'm just going to wait to hear.
Just note, I'm going to be gone tomorrow. Friday, Fran's going to run the committee. Got a couple bills up tomorrow. And,
substitute chair.
Vice chair.
And I think it should be a
what's your schedule?